Welcome to the North Carolina 811 podcast. I am your host, Stephen Moore, and today we have a very special guest. He is the executive director of North Carolina 811, Mr. Louis Panzer. Welcome, Louis.
Hey, welcome to everybody.
Louis has joined us for today's podcast to enlighten us a bit on the North Carolina Underground Damage Prevention Review Board. We're going to go over why this board was created, how it's structured, and how the process works here in North Carolina. Tell us about the law change to the Underground Utility Safety and Damage Prevention Act back in 2014. What prompted it? Who was involved, and what changed?
There had been many attempts to try to make changes to the law prior to 2014. There were several false starts. It was very difficult to get everyone on the same page and in agreement on what needed to be changed and how that language would be structured. What prompted the change ultimately was an unfortunate fatality that occurred with an electric line that was struck. And that really generated the excavators to push towards getting true legislation change to happen. And so when they approached the other stakeholders, and that would be all the facility operators, and including the locators and municipalities, and of course the One Call Center, we all realized that it was time to go ahead and make the changes that were needed. Some of the critical changes, like mandatory membership, which wasn't in the law at that time, and what we're talking about today, of course, enforcement. But, you know, when it was originally initiated, it was very important to have a sponsor in the legislature, in the legislation. So we had Representative Hager, who took the lead and prompted us to continue working through a period of time, which meant we were meeting monthly and sometimes biweekly to work out the language. There was so many pieces to the changes there that and every word was really discussed and dissected until we arrived at language that all the stakeholders could be comfortable with. And that's really important anytime these law changes occur, because they all have lobbyists. And what you want is a unified block of the stakeholders, meaning all the telecoms, the gas, the electric, the excavators, which have a very powerful lobbying block. And to have all those folks together assures that the language will actually pass through both the House and the Senate. So we were fortunate that we had spent a lot of time and were able to get that law passed. That was basically what happened. The items that changed in the law, as I said earlier, a mandatory membership was a very important one. It also included mandatory positive response. It included items about whitelining that were not in the previous law. And it included an entire section on how the law would be enforced. And that's really what we're going to focus on today.
Well, how is enforcement currently structured in North Carolina? How are we doing it right now?
So in North Carolina, our enforcement process is a complaint-driven process. And what this means is that it requires somebody to file a complaint against another party. And this complaint can be about any portion of the law that is not being adhered to. And that's really important, because when the Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Administration, or PHMSA, looks at states in terms of their enforcement and decides whether they're adequate or not, the importance is to have all stakeholders equally allowed to participate in the enforcement process. And this means that a complaint can be lodged against an excavator, or a complaint can be lodged against a facility owner, or a complaint can be lodged against the One Call Center for failing to do what the law requires of each of those entities. So it all starts with a complaint, and with the complaints received by the Underground Damage Prevention Review Board. So that review board is a governor-appointed board of 15 representatives that represent all the stakeholders, and they serve for a four-year term, and you're allowed to serve up to 2 4-year terms back to back. At that point, another representative would be designated for that particular seat. We are now in our second round of 4 years in terms of the review board itself. But the review board receives those complaints and isn't concerned over the amount of damage, whether there was even a damage, the costs that were associated with it. That review board is only looking at the information that's provided by the party to determine whether or not there was a violation of the act. And that's really important. It can't be stated strongly enough that to provide a whole lot of extra information dealing with the costs or anything like that, it's unnecessary. The only thing we're trying to do is get evidence on whether or not a violation occurred.
Well, how has the enforcement been received by the excavation community and the facility operators since it's been put in place?
So it's interesting because, again, the law went into effect October 1 of 2014. And what that required was then that we had to wait for the governor to appoint the individuals. That was all done. Took a little bit of time. There was some frustration initially on the part of really all the parties on different components of it. For example, there was no funding associated with it. So it was really all being done on a volunteer basis. And there was a lot of emphasis on the notification center as being a recipient of complaints and the group that would disseminate those out to the review board and through a joint Dropbox was the way it was originally set up. But the excavators were pleased about the fact that it was open to all and that they could file complaints as well about non-compliance as it related to, let's say, locates being not done on time, or the positive responses were not received. One of the frustrations that the excavators had was how they were to identify the company and specifically how they would provide an address or a name for an individual. So one of the things that the review board did was provide a link to the Secretary of State's site so they could look up a company and find out who the party was as far as their representation with the state. And it's important to note that the review board itself, in the way that it's structured, reviews the complaints, but ultimately makes a recommendation to the Utilities Commission, who is actually the body who is charged with levying that in the form of an order to the party, whether it's for the training or for a fine. So let me back up just a second and state that the response to a complaint, if it's found to be in violation, can result in either training or it can result in a fine up to $2,500 per incident. That is up to the discretion of the review board in each case. In the majority of cases, we recommend training. And the training that's provided is the Pipes Plus training that was created by North Carolina 811, but in conjunction with all the stakeholders. So they all approve their various components. This way, it's free. It's offered online. It includes a certificate at the end and a test to show compliance and to show that they've actually retained the information. And this has been the recommended penalty for the majority of the cases. There have been a handful that were accompanied with a financial penalty, but the majority of them were education. And the other important thing to note is where some states are able to use monies that are collected from these fines that are associated with a complaint, North Carolina is not one of those. Our state constitution does not allow for any monies that are collected through this process to be used even for damage prevention training. It goes into the general fund for education, just like if you were to get a speeding ticket, for example, by a highway patrol officer. So there's no money or no incentive to try to attach financial penalties just for the purpose of furthering the damage prevention review board and that kind of thing. So the excavators were pleased about the fact that it was open. The facility owner and operators were pleased as well, that they had an opportunity to identify people who were not using the system, for example, not calling before they dug, not waiting the appropriate time, before digging. And they were generally happy with the process when it was originally created. There were some, as I said, some challenges with the fact that it was a non-funded effort. And there were also some challenges for the review board in general in the communication with the Utilities Commission. And this wasn't any fault of either the parties. It was really more logistics between following the way that a complaint and its recommendation would flow through the process over to the commission, allowing them to generate an order. There were very specific steps that had to be taken in that. And we can get into that a little bit more when we talk about the complaint process. But in general, the process was well received, not just by the two, by the excavation community and the facility operators, but it was also viewed favorably by PHMSA in their adequacy assessment, because it was open to all stakeholders. It did include penalties. Penalties were assigned for violations. And so we have had the blessing of PHMSA since the beginning of this, and really in 2015 when we really got underway.
How often does the board, the review board, actually meet? And are you guys currently meeting in person or virtually?
So that's a really great point. One of the statements in the law says that we must meet quarterly at minimum. Because this is a state board, it requires public notice of the meetings. Originally, we held them all in person. Some kind of virus or something happened, and that really changed the way people met, period. So at that point, we reverted to a Microsoft Teams environment. It still allowed us to open it to the public, still allowed the public to be able to listen in and hear the complaints, but it allowed for that social distancing and the ability for us to meet without spreading the virus around. So the last two meetings that we've held in the spring and in the summer have been held virtually, and it's expected that the October meeting will be done the same way.
All right, so I am a typical person out there. I've noticed a violation. I need to report it. Can you walk us through the complaint process so that our listeners know exactly what they need to do in order to file that complaint?
Absolutely. So filing the complaint really starts by going to a website currently that is a page within NC811's site, and it's a standalone page. So you can go ahead and flag that for yourself, or use it as a favorite if you wish to go there. But when you go to that page, it includes the law, it includes some of that step process, and it includes the ability to download a PDF form, which is at this point the only way to really file the complaint. So you download this PDF and you print it, and at that point you're going to capture all the relevant information about the complaint that you're filing. And that includes the individual and the company that you believe have violated some portion of the law. It also allows you to create a narrative as to what your story is about why this happened, what you believe happened. And at that point, that form, as well as any accompanying documentation that would be provided, including photographs, positive response information, one call tickets, anything that party wants to put in there into a packet, is then sent over to a PO box currently, which is picked up on by one of the North Carolina 811 staff individuals. It isn't touched by me because I sit and serve on the review board. So I like to keep an arm's length distance from any of that information. But the employee goes to the PO box, picks up that complaint that was sent in by John Doe, scans all the information, puts it into a Dropbox so that it can be made available to the 15 board members of the review board. Also has to, within 10 days, I believe it's 10 days, maybe 15 days. We're going to have to check on the law on that, but I think it's 10 days. Within 10 days, we're required to send notice to the party that has been complained against. So a letter goes out to that individual and says, John Doe has filed a complaint against you, and they're stating that you violated the act. This gives that individual an opportunity to respond with their own narrative, their own documentation, and they may state that they don't believe that this is a violation for some reason. They may not respond at all, and that happens in some cases. As long as that complaint has been received prior to 30 days of a review board meeting, that case will then be put before the review board to make a determination. So we use that 30-day window to really allow both parties an opportunity to provide any information they have. It's important to note that the Underground Damage Prevention Review Board does not conduct a live investigation of the circumstances. There's no one that goes out and takes pictures or does any follow-up. The only information that's utilized to make a determination is that's provided by those two parties. So the review board has John Doe's complaint. They have the information that was provided by the other party. They're reviewing that information very specifically to try to determine if enough information has been provided to state that there's been a violation. So if the determination is made that a violation has occurred, the review board will identify which part of the statute has been violated and make a determination also at that time of what the recommended penalty should be. And if it's Pikes Plus training, they would recommend the individual that needs to take that training. And this is why it's so important that the people who file a complaint identify an individual specifically that they can for the purpose of that if it does come down to them being found in violation. Once that meeting is concluded and all the cases that have been heard for that particular meeting have been done, letters go out to both of the parties. And they say something to the effect of the review board has reviewed case number 123 and determined that a violation of 87-122A, for example, has occurred and has recommended Pipes Plus training for Billy Bob. So a letter goes out to John Doe that confirms that this has occurred, and a letter goes out to Billy Bob and says, you're being asked to take this training. You've been found in violation. Now, Billy may decide at this point that he's not in agreement with that, and he has 30 days from that point to request a hearing if he so chooses. And this hearing would be conducted by the review board at the hopefully subsequent review board meeting. And again, these take place quarterly. We have not to this point in time actually held a hearing. So the process by which that will take place has yet to really have been played out. We do have an attorney who is supporting the review board from the Attorney General's office, and she would be the person that would set up the protocols for that to actually allow for the logistics of how that would actually work in a hearing. But if Billy doesn't request a hearing or we don't hear anything back from him in 30 days, then a request is made to the Utilities Commission for case 123 to request a docket number. That docket number is then supplied back to the chair of the review board, and the review board then the chair sends a follow-up letter with the penalty recommendation and the docket number. And at that point, it leaves the review board altogether and is in the hands of the Utilities Commission. If the Utilities Commission then issues an order, that order would be reviewable on their docket system, which is available online through the Utilities Commission site. So if you actually go to their website and you can do a docket search and through their docket portal, and you can identify that this is a Underground Review Board complaint order that was issued, and you can actually see all of the complaints that have made it to that point that were actually translated to an order and were issued. So that's the sort of process from A to Z as it exists today. Some of the pitfalls on that were identified, one of them being that the notification center receiving complaints and managing and handling and passing those around felt like a conflict of interest in some ways, since we do serve on the board it also didn't allow the notification center to really supply any support information to complaints. At that point, there was a lot of discussion after the first 4 years about some changes that needed to be made to the law to accommodate several different components that we recognized over the 4 years it needed some tweaking and some modification.
So when that law changed again in 2019, explain what the significance of this change was.
So there were several different significant factors. One of the most important ones, of course, to North Carolina 811 is that the notification center was removed from the flow of traffic of complaints coming in and going out. And the language basically states that the review board will receive the complaints and it takes out the notification center on that. The most significant thing was a inclusion of funding, and that funding was to be provided by the facility owner operators, and they agreed to this or it would not have ended up in the law, but up to $200,000 per year to be collected by the facility owners and operators. And that was specifically to fund administration of this process, also to fund legal support, which we pay to, also to support assistance from the Department of Commerce, who is handling the monies and actually doing reporting back to the state as required by an entity that's receiving money, and that there's certain filings that have to be done. And finally, we've been engaging with the Commerce Department for ultimately the creation of a website portal for people to be able to file complaints. But a significant thing that's occurred from this change as well is the migration from Dropbox, which was the method that we were using to communicate internally, over to a Microsoft Teams platform, which is much more robust, allows for a lot more reporting and sifting and sorting, allows for the team members, the actual board members, to be able to go in and review those complaints, has Dropboxes for the different parts of the statute that could be called out as a violation, et cetera. So the biggest things that came about was the removal of the notification center from a direct line of traffic on complaints and processing complaints. It also states that the notification center will provide research in response to requests from the Underground Damage Prevention Review Board. And the way that we are doing that is, let's say that John Doe claims that Billy Bob did not have a ticket for a particular excavation. The notification center, NC811, will look at the location, the times, and the dates, and research to determine whether or not they find the ticket in the system. And then supply that information as an addendum to the other parts that have been provided in addition to that initial complaint. So it's just additional information for the review board to take into consideration before they make a recommendation. The flip side of that might be the facility operator who does not provide positive response. And we can look up and determine and provide to the review board the history on that positive response for that particular ticket. And again, that can be taken into consideration when a determination of a violation is undertaken. But those are the major things that really occurred in 2019. One of the things that was up in the air was, how do you determine the cutoff point on the facility owner operators? We have over 660 members in North Carolina 811. A lot of those folks fall into a very small class of ticket recipients. So it was determined by the review board to use a cutoff of the top 50 transmission recipients of NC811 notifications, to use that as a way to determine what percentage of that $200,000 would be billed. So for example, let's say the top utility in the state has 30% of that volume. Then they would be responsible when we billed for 30% of that $200,000 and on down the line for those top 50. And that's how the money is assigned very similar to the way that North Carolina 811 funds its own budget, which is that we do an assessment based on those transmission volumes, and that's how we bill the members. So they sort of follow that model for the review board, but again, we cut it off at the top 50 to make it reasonable, and that's how the money is actually billed for that.
Well, awesome. Lewis, this is some great information for our listeners. We've gone through just about the entire process, all the new changes that have happened in the law, and all the new things coming up. Lewis, thank you so much for joining us today and explaining the process and giving us a much clearer picture as to how enforcement works here in North Carolina. If our listeners have any questions concerning the Underground Utility Safety Damage Prevention Act, you can read all about it on nc811.org. Just go to the education page of the website and click on North Carolina Law. If you need to report a violation, go to the apps and tools section of nc811.org and click on report a violation. In the not so distant future, the review board will have their own website and you'll be able to file your violations electronically. That's about all the time we have today. Again, thank you, Lewis, for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, all our listeners, for joining us today on today's podcast. Follow us on podbean.com, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher.com, Spotify, or listen to us on the North Carolina 811 app. Until next time, I'm your host, Stephen Moore, and protect the ones you love. Always call 811 before you dig.